out across the galaxy. This is where conspiracy on the wild side meets the perspective of a lifetime. This is the Free Zone with your host, Freeman.
Hello and welcome to the Free Zone. Well, guys, I'll tell you, again and again, I'm told how wonderful my audience is. So I just want to thank you all for being the greatest audience out there and sharing with everyone and keeping up with all the great guests that we've had. So thank you all so much. Now, as you know, Google is censoring everything. YouTube is censoring everything. And Twitter is now shadow banning, right? So it has become more and more important that you actually go to people's websites. Go over to freemantv.com to keep up, because there's no telling whether or not you're going to get the notifications due to this 1984 censorship that we are dealing with. So it has become really important now that you actually go to freemantv.com and share it with everyone. Your retweets, your shares are super critical at this point, because, boy, they are shutting us down. We are getting some weird noises on your end there, Kara, just to let you know.
Are you? Yeah, that's not unusual at all. I don't, one of the reasons I don't use Skype is because they tend to robo me out all the time. I mean, you're talking about the kind of thing that happens to those of us who interview over the airwaves for this kind of stuff. This is why we use Zoom. That's not a secret, I'm sure, to all these people who are monitoring our airwaves. We've moved to Zoom because Skype tends to be a disaster these days. And we'll just continue to do that. We'll continue to move to whatever platform works for us.
That's right. Did you know that the first time you sign into Skype, you get a quote from 1984?
No.
I was one of the very first people to sign into Skype. And when you get your first message from Skype, it is a quote from George Orwell's 1984, where Winston is realizing, the lead character of 1984 is realizing that Big Brother is real. Yeah. And this is the quote that they send on every Skype when you sign up, or at least they did when it started. And, you know, nothing like letting us know. I mean, the word Skype right there is just theft, you know, stolen,
that's
taken.
True. That's true. Absolutely. And we don't think about that stuff anymore. I mean, we just kind of let everything go by us. And when they're telling us the truth, and we're telling ourselves the truth all the time, but we don't stop and listen to what we're saying, you know?
Oh yeah. You know, I feel it all the time. I'm certain I am constantly under surveillance. I know TV is watching me, and they just slapped a smart meter on my house, and I don't even know what that's doing to me. And
right. Can you get rid of it?
No, I'm a renter. There's nothing I can do. The best I can do is move, which I might just do. Right. So again, folks, your donations and support are greatly needed. Right. I mean, seriously.
Right. Even anarchists have to eat and buy gas, gang.
It's true. Well, so, folks, you know, fact goes from mythology, goes to mythology so quickly. I can use my own personal work as an example. This is how quick we can move from fact to fantasy. And we're going to discuss this today with Kara St. Louis.
Sure. Now,
when I began, no one knew what a Freemason was. No one knew anything about occult signs and symbols. And I put together a deep study into the Freemasonic origins of corporate logos. I showed you exactly how each corporate logo related to Masonic ritual. Well, it didn't take very long before Freemasonic corporate logos became this thing known as Illuminati corporate logos. And suddenly people thought that these logos had some sort of magic spell over you. Right. So here I had given you a nuts and bolts example of how this is related to the Freemasonic rituals. I don't know what you're doing over there, Kara.
Sorry. I'm so sorry. I'll be good.
Okay. Okay, so I gave you a nuts and bolts definition, understanding, even showing you the Masons that created the corporate logos so that you could see that there was a very rigid science put to this. But so quickly, it became known as Illuminati corporate logos. And this became this group that seemed to be omnipotent, omniscient. They were planting seeds of their destruction 20 years in advance in movies. And it became fantasy. It got to the point where I had to start calling my work Illuminati corporate logos just so that I could be found in the searches. And what you must realize is how quickly fact becomes fantasy. Because this is just in 12 years of work, all of a sudden we went from Freemasons, which are completely identifiable, to Illuminati, which is this ethereal group that seems to know everything about the world and can predict the future decades in advance. So, folks, this is me using my work to illustrate how quickly we go from fact to fantasy. Now, dangerous imagination and silent assimilation is the territory covered by activist teacher and journalist Kara St. Lewis. And she was a producer at the People's Voice TV, a contributing editor to Veterans Today. She's a novelist and an activist, esoteric researcher with works like The Sun Thief. We will also be discussing dangerous imagination and silent assimilation. There is so much more to the social engineering and cultural implosion of the 20th century, which Kara calls the stolen century. Would it surprise you to find that there is a very good likelihood that there is a false 1,000 years of history that's been inserted into our timeline to justify royal expansion? Now, Kara, I would like to discuss with you a few news stories that might relate to what we're going to discuss today. Mm-hmm. And we're going to begin with the new research that shows that ancient humans had sex with a ghost species or some type of proto-human. So scientists have discovered that there was an unknown humanoid or hominoid species that had sex with the humans, and that's how we became. So have you heard about this ghost species proto-human article?
No, I haven't heard about the article, but it's certainly not a new idea. It does come around every once in a while. I think, aren't you able to go back all the way to this, Zachariah Sitchin stuff and the Nephilim and them mating with, you know, the humans who are already here, that kind of stuff.
That is certainly where I would go with this. You know, I mean, if we're talking about a proto species, yeah, we're talking about maybe visitors or, you know, maybe there were other races of hominids on planet Earth other than the ones we know.
Well, this is the question. It really is the question. Now, as you know, I've done some research on seed races. I mean, there's so many things that you've said already that I can touch on, from being surveilled, which has happened to me in the last year.
Let's stick with the news for now, and then we'll get to that.
Right. So, yes, one of the things I'm most interested in is serious evidence of seed races, where they come from, who was here, if anybody, when they got here, and basically how we evolved. So what I don't buy into is an often discussed theory that there was a race of non-humans, of aliens, if you will, of non-Earth types, living beings, who somehow interfered with our DNA. That I don't think is true. And that just goes back to who I think we are as beings. But in terms of there being a possibility that we've interbred with other races, and even in, the way you put it was ghost races, which, I mean, I'm not sure what they mean by that. Do they mean that it's something, it's a race that we can't identify? Does it mean it's okay.
Yes.
Because it could also mean a race that we can't see. It could mean a race that exists in a different dimension that could interact with us. And there are plenty of those. We tend to see them as negative, and that's because their effect on us is negative. Or, you know, we talk about the djinn, we talk about archons, we talk about any race of being that is parasitical in nature. And certainly there are a lot of people out there talking about, well, maybe not lots, but there are some people out there who make it their business to talk about sex from the other side, you know, love bites, I think is what they, it's called love bites. I haven't really delved into her work too much, but certainly Evie, there's a whole, Evie Lorgan.
She was the very first and only in-studio guest I ever had.
Really?
Yes. She's so wonderful. I love her so much.
Well, I think I have met her one time when Danny and Lisa were doing one of those roundtables. But other than that, I haven't seen her stuff too much. I do know that she's doing a lot of work on that. So there's all kinds of ways that can happen.
Yeah, that definitely touches upon what Serge Manast was saying about Project Bluebeam. As many people think Bluebeam is actually an alien invasion or a false alien invasion, Bluebeam, according to the guy who wrote the article, is actually a method of channeling demons, if you will, or entities into your soul using fiber optics, using computers, you know? And many people don't read the fine print when it comes down to Project Bluebeam. But now this could take us to another layer. So for the first time, scientists in the U.S. have successfully edited the DNA of human embryos using the much talked about gene editing tool CRISPR. Meanwhile, Cenogene has produced Long, the world's first genetically modified cloned superdog, and genetically engineered salmon has now reached your dinner table. Right. So we're looking at gene editing, already editing the DNA of human embryos, producing genetically modified clone super dogs and super large salmon. So now in the 21st century, we're already looking at a great mystery here as to what all of these different species are going to become as we start to edit their DNA. Do you have any thoughts on that?
I do have some thoughts on that. First of all, why is it being allowed? Okay. I don't think that, the question that you've asked is, what are we going to do with all this new stuff? Well, why the hell are we doing that? Why is this being allowed to begin with? This is this is fake biology. This is artificial intelligence. And we're just allowing it to create this unenlivened stuff. You know, there's artificial intelligence and there's authentic intelligence. One is AI, one is creates fake biologies. Anytime you see something that isn't real, for example, a computer is a dim replica of the human brain, or, you know, you get cloned animals, you get, or you have the authentic creators. That's us. We are the original magicians. And so it's this neck and neck race all the time between this thing that wants to be us and us just going on our merry way, not realizing what's actually happening right beside us, you know? And I just don't understand why it's being allowed. It's not necessary. It seriously isn't necessary.
Yeah, I agree. And it took 25 years for them to accept the genetically modified salmon as food. But all the way back to 1984, I think it was, the FDA had already agreed to us eating cloned beef. Yeah. And there's already millions of cloned cows out there, and everybody's already eating cloned meat. Now, the curious thing about cloning is that, as you're saying, there's this authentic spark that comes from us during the mating ritual, if you will. But cloning uses an electronic spark to zap the zygote into life and start the life into this. So there is a big difference between whatever that authentic spark is inside of us and the electrical shark that we give to a clone.
Exactly. And then because we are beings of heartfelt understanding, what will we do when we're faced with these beings who are electronically created, who are not authentically human, in my view, are not authentically human, okay? What will we do then? What will we do then? I mean, it's Frankenbiology, it's the Manhattan Project at, to the nth degree. And it's really, this is just the kind of thing that has to stop. So,
well, did you know that you, with a little bit of spit, can sequence your own DNA at helix.com and unlock your potential?
I did not know that. I won't be doing that, but yes,
let's all get over to helix.com.
I mean, this is why the cops can set up roadblocks and scrape the inside of your cheeks and have your DNA. And, yeah. And honestly, it's about creating this DNA registry. It's about a registry. It's about creating a registry. This is what the Human Genome Project is about. You know, all of these things that we cooperate with that we get really excited about. I don't know why we trust any of these. I mean, it's really just mad science, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. I mean, Google, their Calico division, has the largest DNA database next to the Mormons.
Yeah. Do they really?
Yeah. So here we are back at Google again. Oh, my God. Does no one know that Google is Skynet? I mean, they've got AI. They've got quantum computers. They have a DNA database. I mean, you know, this is going out of hand. And meanwhile, DARPA is announcing that their neural engineering system design program can be implanted into the human brain and provide precise communication between the brain and the digital world.
Mm-hmm. And people will go for that. Why?
Oh, they're
seriously
so excited. So
why
excited.
Why are people going to go for that? I don't. And I think people are going for that because they don't understand who we are. They've completely lost sight of the fact that there's nothing out there. I was talking, do you know who Shane the Ruiner is?
No.
I just did an interview with him and we were talking about CERN and what CERN actually is. And in his view, it's this mighty huge thing, this mighty huge, you know, computer data processing, communication thing between the moon and Saturn. And I mean, all of these things. But the thing that he and I both agree about is that we're still bigger than that. The individual human being is still bigger than that. And the fact that we have completely been convinced that we have no power, no internal guts, no moral fiber, no nothing, you know, makes us want to link up to a computer and have the computer be part of us so that we can be better. We can be magic. They don't get that we're already magic. We are the original magicians on this planet. We're still that. We are still that. We just have to stop and know that, you know, unhook, come away from it, stop being dazzled by this nonsense. But one of the reasons that we can be dazzled by this nonsense is because they have us by the short hairs, because they have us addicted in every way imaginable. So
absolutely.
There you go.
Yes.
They can
and
dance.
I mean, folks, you've heard of megabytes. You've heard of gigabytes. But the brain works at exabytes and even pentabytes. And
oh, yeah.
CERN's computer, the grid, is the first system to be able to push exabytes of information. Now realize, everything written by mankind could fit into 5 exabytes. So now we have CERN capable of pushing this exabyte limit that is now capable of transferring souls, mentalities, whatever you want to call it, through their system. You know, Google, of course, is not far behind. So, yeah, we are absolutely at that point of neuro connection with computers. And, yeah, I want to stay a human there, Kara. I really do.
Yeah, me too. I don't get it. I really don't get it. And now, you know, maybe you have some listeners out there who are saying, hell yeah, the future is here. But you know what? You've got to make a stand right now. You've got to make a stand right now because you do not want to lose your soul, your body. We're already enslaved. We're enslaved because we allow it to happen, you know?
USA Today put out an article this week with the bold headline stating, "You will be chipped." Mm. That's the headline.
Will I?
Will you? Everyone will be chipped, they say.
Yeah. Isn't it sad? The thing is, I have 3 children. They're 20, 22, and 24. And I have been telling them since they were old enough to listen that all I really wanted was to be covered in grandchildren. But you know what? I don't want that anymore. I don't want that anymore because there's too much for them to have to cope with right now in terms of fighting off the damage that's right just on the horizon. You have situations now where if you don't let your child be vaccinated with the Hep B in the hospital, they'll take it from you, even though that is so illegal. It is so illegal. But if you've just given birth to a baby, you know, and they're getting ready to walk out the door with it because you won't let it have the Hep B, then the chances are you're going to do it, right? I mean, there's just so much stuff. Now I tell them, look, don't hold off, hold off. Let's see if we can, you know, let's see what happens in the next 10 years, for God's sake, because I don't want to see my I couldn't bear it. I couldn't bear it, Freeman.
I understand.
If I saw my grandchildren, you know, swallowed by what's right on the horizon right now. So anyway.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, the Freemasons had a CHIP program, a child identification program.
Yeah.
And, you know, they just openly call it the CHIP program, and it comes straight from the Freemasons. And they're like, you know, don't you want your child to be safe? Get the chip, right?
Right, exactly. Well, yeah. I mean, in 10, 20, 30 years ago, we might have said, oh, yeah. But you know what? That's not going to save your child. You know, we all know, well, I hope we all know what at least some of the statistics for missing children are on this planet right now.
Oh, God.
Chipping isn't going to do a damn thing for that.
No, if anything, it's just going to let the elite know where your child is. I mean, Disney's already tracking children through the applications on your phone.
Yeah, it's just like giving pedophiles a catalog to search through.
There you go. Yeah.
Like remember the old Sears Christmas catalog, right?
Oh, man. Or that, the Mormon date book, you know?
So, yeah. So let's not kid ourselves, folks. Now is the time. We are at so many thresholds right now. We've got to say no. It's really life or death at this point.
Well, Kara, you and I have been putting out information every week for years now. And that means we are expanding the consciousness. I mean, weekly. And this imagination, this information is filling the imagination, and the imagination is growing and changing so rapidly. It's amazing. I mean, when I think about when I began, how little was known about even the Freemasons or secret societies. I mean, there was no Dan Brown yet. There was nothing coming out. Now look at us. Everybody has an opinion. Everybody knows. And yet nobody knows anything because they just get these little tidbits and then the imagination goes wild with it, like I was describing at the beginning of this show.
Mm-hmm.
So,
well, I think... Go ahead. No, I think what happens is... We reach a new level of understanding, and then we kind of sing ourselves to sleep on that level by singing the same song all the time, instead of going deeper, 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 deeper. What happens, what happened to me and what has happened to several of the researchers I know, is that you start in a certain place. I started with chemtrails right after my mother was killed. A lot of people start with chemtrails because it's really easy in the sense that you look up, it's very physical, it's right there.
It is a gateway conspiracy, for sure.
It is a gateway. It's absolutely a gateway, and it's really probably the most critical gateway. So that's good that that's where we start. But you then progress. You progress from there, okay? Thankfully, a lot of people are discovering that all the time. So a serious percentage of the research population stays with chemtrails all the time. Now, what happened to me is that I quickly realized that I needed to know why we're allowing this to happen and why we were participating in it, and sometimes happily, do you know what I mean? Thinking we were doing a great thing. Why? What the hell was going on there? So that led me and my ex-writing partner, Harold Caltabella, to do Dangerous Imagination, Silent Assimilation, the first volume, the first edition.
Now, you have a new volume of that out now, right?
I do, my friend. I do. I have just about a month ago released a second edition, which is twice as big, 600 pages long, because I've had to add, first of all, I beefed up the chemtrail section. Second of all, because we're always learning, right? Second of all, I had to add some of the sections that I was I just couldn't do it, man. It's so, when you come up against the social engineering stuff, it just so, you know, takes it out of you.
There's a lot of work.
What's actually going on? Oh my God, right? So I actually just added a big section on the Vatican, and I added a big section on psychiatric industry. Big deal.
That's dangerous imagination. That's Dangerous Imagination, Silent Assimilation.
Second edition, my friends. It's out. It's out. And in the meantime, I also went from that to learning about the false chronology. Some research came to me out of Germany via my wonderful husband, who is German and is a tireless, rabid researcher. And so came across this fellow in Germany who was doing some extraordinarily scientific work on etymology. On etymology, it's kind of this John Nash character, you know? He just sees connections everywhere. He's in his mid-80s now. He's not well. He's not going to be with us much longer. But he put together a tremendous amount of extraordinarily good research on a race called the Fae. And so I ran with that as well because it made all kinds of sense to me. And so I've done a book with my friend Maria Wheatley called Guardians of Blood and Fire, The Search for the Celtic Heart, which is actually about the Fae and all that research. So started in, 2010, July 11th, 2010 is when my mother died. I started working on the book after Christmas in 2011. Now it's 2017. My journey has taken me from chemtrails all the way to a seed race. And the understanding that how mighty we are, how magical we are, and why it is that they must shut us down. They must shut us down, and we are elusive. We are almost impossible to shut down. We're constantly leaking out of our boxes, every box they try to put us in. So what I'm doing now, basically, is giving lectures that I call Reverse Engineering the Trance. And each bit of this trance that we're in, we have to have a look at, we have to take it apart. And then I'm also doing workshops on regaining control of your own thoughts, because our thoughts are not our own. And I have some tools. I have some tools that work really well. So I've gone from looking up at the sky and going, what the hell is that? You know, creating ways or delivering ways to help us get our thoughts back, because our thoughts are not our own. We're constantly being barraged by crap from the outside that makes us do, whether it's electromagnetic or it's the archons or it's psychological warfare, whatever. We are bombed all the time, or the computers right in front of us, right?
Yeah.
We're bombed all the time into not locating our own thoughts, not understanding what is a genuine, authentic thought from our own self. That's where we're at right now.
Yeah, we lost a lot of that with this interconnectedness that we have. I mean, the internet is a wonderful tool, but at the same time, we are getting filled and filled with thoughts that aren't our own. And, you know, we're of the last generation that lived before the internet.
Listen, if you're about my age, Freeman, which you're not, you're probably a lot younger than I am. But if you're in there's the what we call the 50s club. A lot of us are talking about the 50s club because we really are the bridge generation, you know.
I just turned 50.
Did you? Welcome. Because they're just waiting for us to die, man.
Yes.
We're the only ones who remember. We're the ones who remember. The kids do not have a frame of reference.
No.
And we do.
There is no time in the internet as well. So information that's put out today or 12 years ago, you can't tell what's the new. So you can't build on information.
Right. You can't. Plus, they've really perfected the art of the hamster wheel, you know, keeping us in these loops all the time, around. I remember when I was working for the People's Voice, I was being interviewed by Richie Allen. About the Sun Thief. And he said to me, listen, Kara, and I knew what was coming because it was always the same stuff. It was, what's the difference between a contrail and a chemtrail?
Really?
Oh my God. If I hear that one more time, I swear to God.
I've been talking about chemtrails since 1996.
Right?
You think I'm not
sick?
Yeah.
Oh my God. And the other one is, it couldn't possibly be happening because too many people would have to know about it. Am I right?
Right.
Yeah. Okay. First of all, the first question's been answered up one side and down the other. If you still think that that's not answered, there's something serious. There's no hope. There's
yeah.
No
you're hope. Not even trying.
If you don't get that one, there's no hope. The second one can be answered by social engineering. everything is compartmentalized to the point that nobody knows what anybody else is doing. It's really that simple. And God, if you've ever been in a corporation, or if you've ever been in the army, or if you've ever been in a factory working, you understand what compartmentalization is about. You don't know what the guy down the line is doing, really. Anyway, so those things, while Richie was asking me those questions, because he was saying, you know, I always get asked the same questions, I literally left my body, okay? And I looked at that, and I thought, there it is. That is nothing more than a hamster wheel they've got us running on, and we cannot get off it. And then I realized that we're surrounded by hamster wheels. So this is a serious social engineering science to keep us. I mean, you could call them memes if you wanted to. I think a meme is many things, but really it's just the thought hamster wheel, and it's all we do all the time, because we're trained to stay on these wheels.
Yeah.
You know, from the minute we go to school, which is very Pavlovian, they've got us. They've got us in the, and it takes what, a couple of generations to change the narrative to being whatever they want it to be. So,
yeah. I opened with the idea that I had a nuts and bolts science on Freemasonry, and suddenly it became this ethereal Illuminati. I mean, point to me, folks. Anyone out there, point to me, the Illuminati. You know, I have gone.
Exactly.
You know, they don't exist. It's not.
Well, that's the thing. I was talking to Shane when we were interviewing. He will tell you he's from two very minor bloodline families, and we talked about the really, really the growing irrelevance of this idea of the Illuminati. You know, it's irrelevant. It doesn't matter. It's just a boogeyman.
Yes.
You know. That's all it is. That something to convince the ordinary guy on the street that there is somebody out there who has all the secrets and all the magic. In fact, that's not, you know, you've got predators, you've got parasites, but the Illuminati is kind of like, you know, the Wizard of Oz. It's not the guy behind the curtain, man. It's irrelevant.
Yeah, and doesn't exist.
It doesn't exist.
I mean, if you want to talk about the Ordo Templi Orientis, if you want to talk about Freemasonry, if you want to talk about Skull and Bones, Jesuits, these all exist. But this Illuminati, this thing does not exist. Yeah. And their ability to project the Twin Tower falling in movies 20 years prior is ridiculous. Yeah.
It is ridiculous. First of all, I hope you and everybody who's out there do this, because it's extraordinarily important. There are a lot of work being done on the timeline right now, our so-called history, and the chronology that we all accept as true, which isn't true at all. And there are lots and lots of people doing work on this right now. Anatoly Fomenko was the first one I came across, and I came across him through a woman called Sylvia Ivanova, who's doing a tremendous amount of really good research on sacred sites and megaliths and what she calls the survivors, which is sort of a couple of centuries ago. There's all kinds of evidence that a couple of centuries ago, we still have had the remnants of what she calls Atlantis. I don't call it Atlantis. I call it the Fae, but it almost doesn't matter what you call it in this context, because what you really want to think about is the global the global advanced civilization that existed up till a couple hundred years ago, when the world was absconded with, when our world was absconded with, and our narrative was changed, and we were taught that we were nothing. We were taught that we were impotent. We were taught that we had no power, skills, magic, nothing. Anyway, so that's one of the things that it's very important for you to get a connection to, is this idea that the history that you're being given is false. It's false. It doesn't exist. And you've just been fed this line to keep this line to keep you down and keep other people up. And that is way more important than focusing on this fairy tale story of the Illuminati, you know?
Well, magic, by definition, is utilizing the imagination and the will to manifest.
It is. We do it all the time. We don't ever not do it, but we do it unconsciously. We do it without any conscious sense that that's what we're doing. If it's around you, you've manifested it. If it's around you, you created it. Okay. And I consider myself now to be the way I like to look at myself now. And I think a lot of people do is I am the curator of all that I've created until now. You can consciously, absolutely, and you must get back in touch with your sacred, innate, birthright power to manifest on purpose. Okay? We can all do it. We can absolutely all do it.
Do you have some methods?
I do. That's what my workshop's about, man. I teach the first thing that you have to do, and I'm just going to be, I do this, okay, I do this online because I have to. Because people around the world want to do it, and they just can't get where I am. I also do it in person. I've got, when I go back to the United States in late November, I'll be doing lecture/workshop in San Francisco, two of them probably, a couple of them in Phoenix, one in Albuquerque, and then back here to do some more. But I live in London now. I had to get out of the United States to get my voice heard. Anyway, I do it in person when I can, but I do it a lot. You can hook up with me on Facebook. We've got a group started that's kind of all interested in doing this. It's a material meditation. It's what I call a material meditation. The first thing you have to do is get control of your own thoughts. So together we build a material meditation. It's not easy to do, but once you get it built, you can do it in about 5 minutes a day. And it is one of those things that several things happen when you get really good at it and you practiced it for a while. First of all, it only takes about 5 minutes to chase all the entities outside your brain away. An archon will get bored out of its whatever it has. It will become extraordinarily disinterested in you. If you can regain sovereignty of your own mind for about 5 minutes in a row, okay? It has no interest in a person, an entity that has that kind of control over its own thoughts. So you solve a lot of problems when you learn how to do this. The other thing that it does is that when you get really good at it, you create a thought wave. In the end, you create a thought wave, okay? You also, because you choose a material object, a man-made object on which to focus, you get to the point where you can locate the archetype of that object, or what I like to call the or. Now, you probably have heard me say this before because I'm going to say it till the day I die, but the human imagination is the translator between the morphogenic field, which is pure potential, and the material plane, which is where we manifest stuff, okay? So we should have a conscious connection to the morphogenic field. What we have is an unconscious connection. But when you can locate the archetype in your mind, in your authentic, controlled mind, the archetype of something, an object, when what you're doing is you're touching the field again on purpose. So this is something that I'm doing. I mean, I'm not teaching anymore. Most of us have to work for a living. Most of us who are anarchists, most of us who are activists have to work a day job or a night job, right? We have to work a buttload of hours every week just so that we can do this on the side. I am not doing that anymore because I was, do you want to get into that right now?
Sure.
Okay, because I'm there.
Let's talk about the trials and tribulations, you know, because it's not an easy gig.
No, it isn't an easy gig. It is, my friend Randy Moggins says, people who are putting out authentic work in this arena suffer. We don't get rich. If you see somebody who's got a big marketing platform behind them, that's bullshit, okay? That's not authentic activism. That's Walt Disney. That's MGM. That's, you know, that's not what we're doing. Anyway.
PewDiePie.
That's right. So I was a teacher. Most people know that I'm a Waldorf teacher. And I have been doing this for the last 3 or 4 years over here. Anyway, the last year or so, my school... And by the way, nobody knows where I teach. That's what's so funny. My school is just so rabidly worried that people are going to figure out where I taught. No one is ever going to figure out this little tiny picayune bullshit school. It's not going to happen, okay? And I never, ever would say, because that puts the children in harm's way. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
I just would never do it. Anyway, However, I got the people that I worked for always knew what I did kind of in the background. They really weren't worried about it because it's my own business, you know. But then this last year, I got a new boss, and this boss did not like my work. And the part of my work that she didn't like the most was the false chronology. That caused her massive problems. And so she harassed me for the whole year, and she had me surveilled. Everything I did online was surveilled and commented on by her, you know, or taken to the board of trustees. And that also is not okay because I've never done anything. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
She surveilled me like crazy. And I think that this is just what's coming. I'm pretty sure that most people in most businesses are under surveillance all the time now. I think it's pretty standard.
Yeah.
But I was stunned. I was absolutely stunned. And I finally just, it ended up being a standoff basically. And it's like a forced resignation almost when you get to a place like this. It's definitely being sacked. You're definitely being fired because you're being tormented till the point you can't stand it anymore. Anyway, so that's what's giving me all the time to do what I'm doing now. It's just another example I can pull up of the stuff that we're going through. What I have now is the gift of time, Freeman. I have the gift of time. And man, that's dangerous to give somebody like me the gift of time.
Yeah.
Because I could do all kinds of shit now.
I hear you. And if we... Yeah, you know, keep the books rolling and keep, mm-hmm. and folks, you know, if you buy their books, if you buy Kara's books off Amazon, you don't get very much. I don't know if you have a dedicated site.
I do, because I am my own publisher. I publish my own books. I am White Lion Press, so buy them on Amazon for me.
Okay.
I am also my own publisher because I was never going to walk into that situation where... there's a couple things you can do for me though, Freeman. Thank you for opening up the space for that. Do buy them from Amazon because I am my own publisher and White Lion Press. And that is because when someone gets a book contract with a major publisher, they will pay you this princely sum of about 40 cents a book.
Right.
Okay. And they will not do any of the marketing for you anymore. You got to do it all yourself. So I've created my own publishing house. It's called White Lion Press. And I get around that in many, many ways. Good for you. Cause you know what? Artists and activists have got to take control of their own work. You've got to take it back. You've got to take it back. It means more work in different ways, like getting people to be aware of who you are and what you're putting out and why they should buy from you. But you're going to have to do that with the other guys anyway.
Well, anyways, now again, with the shadow banning and all of the censoring that Google and Twitter are doing, you know, it's really up to the audience for them to get out there and retweet and share and make sure that we're getting out there.
It is. You've got to be guerrilla. You've got to be a guerrilla about all this stuff anyway. But the other couple things that I'm doing, like I said, I'm setting up my workshops. You can find that on Facebook. I'm on Facebook. I have an author's page and I'm extraordinarily responsive. So let me know if you're interested in any of that stuff and I'll get with you. The other thing I'm doing is I am so excited about this platform of Patreon. I've got a Patreon page now and I can interact one-to-one with anybody who signs up to be my patron. Hmm. And you could do that for $1 a month, man. But if I've got 3,000, followers and they all sign, half of them sign up for $1, then I can keep buying groceries and making my car payment, you know? So anyway, that's www.patreon.com/Kara St. Louis without a dot between the Saint and the Louis. I invite you to come over there. I've set up, I'm doing what I call the Patreon series, the patron series of interviews. I've done, Dan Schreiber from Starseed in Australia, fantastic interview, because I'm trying to provide value, as you do, Freeman, for the people who come to your channel. And I've just done Shane the Ruiner. Some people out there will know who he is. And I'm getting ready to interview Mike Williams and Mark Devlin on the fake Paul McCartney, Beatles, all these musicians who are suddenly dying, and the MusicCon thing, that's coming up. That'll be on my patron series. So it gives me an opportunity to do something extraordinarily direct. And I figure if you can afford a dollar a month to pay for everything I have to give, then I'm going to give you everything I have to give, you know?
Right. Yes. I am definitely trying to be the best.
You do it, man. You do it.
What a world.
Right? But that's okay because we're having to create something new. We're always having to do end runs around their crap. And they're always throwing so more crap around it. They're always throwing more crap at us. You know, I never thought the day would come when I wouldn't be able to teach because I questioned the historical timeline. I mean, think about that out there. Maybe some of the people who are listening to your channel are teachers. Maybe your mom was a teacher. Maybe your dad was a teacher. Maybe your sons or daughters are teachers. Teachers are being shut up. I'm not, you know, here I am. I've lost my job because I question the timeline because there's serious scientific evidence that indicates that we've had at least a thousand years shoved into our timeline with, you know, all of these fake monarchies, these fake royal families, so that there would be some kind of justification for them ruling the world. You know, that's what it's about.
Right, right, exactly. And they're creating the future mythos so that we can look back on America and say, look what happens when we give you freedom.
Right.
And we're all falling right into that plan and becoming the worst beings on this planet with no understanding at all. People just don't want to dig. They don't want to do the homework and do the work necessary to actually know what you're talking about.
Right. Well, actually, I think that's why I was started talking about the false chronology. I'm glad you said that because it reminded me of what you said that brought me to that point. Because they can write the narrative any way they want to. And because they can change the narrative on us in basically one generation by putting a five-year-old in a desk at a school factory, they can write a history that looks very much like something was predicted 100 years ago. Because all they have to do is write that in a book and go, oh, look. Magic, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And it's called back, and you know, it's a technique. It's a technique that was used in the Talmudic texts, I believe, you know, way, 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 way back when the Caesars were trying to beat Israel into, well, it wasn't really Israel. They were trying to beat that part of the Jews or the Palestinians and that kind of in that area into submission. The Jewish Wars, I think, is what they called it. Anyway, that's when you had a situation where one of their historians went to work for the Caesars and took this technique that he'd learned in the Talmudic scriptures, which actually was meant to be sort of a code. And started backdating stuff. So it looked like everything that was happening at that time had been predicted. And so it was meant to be.
Right. Right. You know, and I've also heard where schools, instead of, because we have become so socially conscious at this point, that they can no longer state in certain schools that, now this was told to me, so I'll have to research and find out whether or not it's actually true. But I was told in Canada that they could no longer teach that it was the German people that created the Nazi Party and did World War II. They now have to put it in as if aliens had come down and started World War II so that we don't offend any of the nationalities by associating them with these heinous acts.
That's interesting because I live in Europe now and there's a lot of... there's a lot of things going on over here that are quite reminiscent of the scapegoating of the Germans in World War I and World War II both, largely due to the fact that Angela Merkel is controlling and really riding herd on Europe in terms of the, you know, the European Union. It looks very much like it's a Germany-driven project, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And frankly, I also have to say to you, I should say to you, that the woman who... this is going to crack you up. The woman who had such a big problem with my dismantling of the chronology was from Berlin. She was German. And in Germany, it's illegal to question history. So the fact that I was questioning history just freaked her out.
Wow.
You know, it just scared the hell. I mean, it pushed every button, because in Germany, it is illegal to question history. In fact, there's all kinds of things going on in Europe that are scary as hell, really scary as hell. And it looks to me like the Germans are about to get scapegoated again for something. Although, honestly, Freeman, I don't think we're on the verge of World War III. I think that despite the fact that something happens about every week, such that people will go, oh, here it comes, you know.
North Korea.
Yeah, it's all of that. But in reality, all they're really doing is keeping us on the verge of a nervous breakdown emotionally, so right. that they can harvest that energy from us. It's not, I mean, the other shoe's never going to drop, because there is nothing worse for us as humans than waiting for the other shoe to drop. That just keeps, you know, our negative hysterical energy at peak capacity so that they can harvest it from us, you know?
Yes. Yes. I think that's the job of the TSA.
Yeah, right.
What a nightmare. You know, I actually ran through one of those metal detectors with a full metal camera in my pocket that I forgot was there, and yeah. it didn't even register.
Really?
Yeah. So why am I taking off my shoes? Why am I taking off my shoes?
I don't know. I will say that it seems like coming back and forth from Europe, like I do a lot, because my family's still in the United States. It's gotten easier actually to get into the States from here, but I also carry a US passport. That helps, you know. When I was getting ready to go in the last time, I did realize, because Trump's got some policies in place about who can come and go, you know, that I'm not completely versed up on, and those were brand new. So I was waiting in line to offload my luggage. And somebody was getting turned away. They had to go to their embassy, and I don't know, it was an interesting situation that one doesn't often see when one is flying out, you know, into the United States. So, but I've also noticed that I usually go into Logan, and I've noticed that it's a cakewalk now, man. It used to be a deal. Now it's just like, oh, hi, whatever. So in some ways, it's getting easier, but I have to say that I feel that's because, and this is where I'm going to get into trouble, I'm sure, but it's this border stuff, you know, it's this plan to overrun all the borders. So what the hell do they care? You know, sure, come on in, right? Because the plan is to overrun all the borders and crash all the economies. That couldn't be more evident than it is here in Europe, especially with Germany, okay? My brother-in-law, believe it or not, is never going to get over this. My brother-in-law is what they call the prime minister of Thuringia, which is like a state. It's like this big state in Germany. And he, you know, he is of the left party in Germany. And he's one of these, he's somebody who couldn't, you know, get immigrants and refugees. They're not refugees. They're economic immigrants. Okay. They're not refugees. Anyway, he can't seem to flood his state in Germany fast enough with people from Northern Africa and Syria and wherever else that they're coming. And this is a plan. This is a plan to crash economies, you know? So it may well be that it's easy for me. It's easy to get in and out because they want it to be easy to get in and out now, whereas it hasn't been easy to get in and out since, you know, 9/11.
Right. All right. Yeah, I definitely see that happening all over. And I mean, I personally need just to say I don't believe in a shoe bomber. And I really feel like there's something more about having us needed to be barefoot as we go through right. this device that doesn't seem right. to be detecting any metal in my pockets.
Right.
So,
yeah.
you know, we need to look at our world in a much stranger way and realize.
Do. Yeah. We do. And listen, Freeman, if it's a security issue, then how come I can upgrade my ticket and go fast track? Huh?
Yeah. Yeah.
How come I could just whiz on through if I just pay them a little more, you know?
Well, especially if you give them a retina scan.
A retina scan. I'm not going to give. Well, who knows? You know, we probably do that. We probably do that every time we have to go in. Have you had to go through the airports where you have to, like, they take your picture and then you get a little printout of your face and
Yeah. And you got to push that little button and wait to see if you get a green light. Yeah.
That's what they're doing. That's what they're doing, I'm sure. So, I mean, but this is kind of, you know, my husband was telling me about this Google thing that you were probably talking about. It's probably what you were talking about at the top of the hour. There's this thing called the toxicity monitor. It's a toxicity monitor for your speech. Have you seen this?
No.
God, I wish I could remember what it's called, but somebody out there will remember what it's called. Maybe I will before I forget, but before we're done. But there is a program now that will analyze what you type in to, say, Facebook or Google or whatever, based on what they call a toxicity level. Okay. I just did an article on this for my Patreon.
Now we're talking verbal toxicity here.
Well, yeah, written toxicity, I think.
Okay, right.
It's about, like, for example, if you use the word if you say do not like, or you say I don't like Trump, or I don't like Merkel, or I don't like this, or I don't like that, it gives you a level of toxicity. Like if you say and I'm just kind of pulling figures out of my head right now. I had them in front of me. I don't like Merkel might get you a 68% toxicity quotient. And so that sentence will be eliminated from the conversation.
So that's like a troll meter.
Yes. That's what they're saying. That's what they're saying. It is. Oh, look, we can eliminate trolls, but it's bullshit. Okay. Right. That's okay. And so this guy who was evaluating this new piece of software, decided to just take one word and plug it in just to see what happened. So he decided to take some political leaders, right? You would put Trump in and you would get like a 70% negative toxic, or Putin 60% toxic, or Merkel 35% toxic, blah, 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 right? All the way down to guess who had the lowest toxicity level, which lets me know who owns the goddamn thing. I can curse on your show, can't I?
Sure. We're in a free world here.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Guess who has the lowest toxicity level just by name?
I first thing that came to mind was Barack Obama, but I don't think that's right.
No, you would think so, wouldn't you? You would think
Rothschilds, so. Rockefellers.
Oh, nope. Ready? Ready?
Yeah. Well,
Clinton.
No.
1% toxicity level.
Clinton. Oh, my God.
And if you type in, I like Hillary Clinton, it's 0%.
Oh, my God.
So who owns that piece of software, I wonder?
Yeah. Huh? I mean, oh, my God. Those are the most evil people on the planet.
Right. Anyway, so there's this whole, I mean, this is supposed to take care of trolling, which it.
Wow. That's crazy. I had no idea about that.
That's a new Google platform. Look for that in your. Look for that. In your next rollout of Windows or whatever the hell it is. Well, people do that. You know, people say, well, I use Google Plus because it's easy, or I use Google chat rooms for my interviews because it's really, really easy. I don't, because I know they're chasing me all the time. I know they know what I say, think, and do all the time. Do I have to offer myself up as a lamb to the slaughter and sharpen the knife for them? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I mean, you have to retain a little bit of dignity if you know what's going on.
Absolutely. We use these tools against them, but at the same time, you know, we need to take care and, you know, stay in our own little networks as well.
Right. Yeah, we have to start. One of the things that we've been talking about, because I use Facebook a lot because that's where everybody is. And I've just accepted the fact that that's where I got to be. So that's fine. But when it comes to incubating new ideas and things, you kind of have to do that with a small group of people that you trust, and then bring out your ideas, because otherwise they're going to get buried immediately. There's so many techniques they can use on Facebook to bury your stuff. One of the things that makes me the craziest is this technique called shadowing. Do you know what I mean?
Oh, I've been shadowed from day one.
Oh, I hate it. Listen, I'll put out, you know, I'll get really excited about something and I'll want people to be kind of on the watch for what I'm coming up with. So I'll say something on Facebook and I'll be damned within about 5 minutes, there'll be 10 posts under what I said of people posting other people's work about other stuff. So the last thing that anybody gives a shit about is what I just said.
Right.
That's shadowing, guys. And that's trolling. That's trolling in the extreme. So if you're somebody who accidentally does that, I have to tell you, it's not cool. And I not only do I get rid of, delete those posts, but a lot of times I block people when they do that.
Yeah.
Because it's, even if you don't realize what you've done, it's one of the rudest things I've ever seen in my life.
You know, someone stole my title on YouTube because Google Plus changed my name on YouTube from Freeman TV to Freeman Fly. And so then somebody stole my YouTube title and they have put up hundreds of my videos. And I don't know what to do about it. Yeah, they've got
the... Oh, man.
Yeah. I don't know what to do.
I don't know. Just, you know, who kind of has tends to know stuff like that is Randy Moggins. Why don't you ask him if there's
anything? All right. I'll talk to him about that because... Yeah. It's rather frustrating, really, to watch it. I mean, they haven't monetized my videos. I don't know what they're doing, but they have hundreds of them up, and they've stolen everything, including my name, and I don't even know what to do about it.
Yeah, ask Randy, because he's usually got some end runs that he knows about. So, oh, that's abominable. I can't believe it. But this I don't know. Me must be doing good work because they're trying to shut you up. Apparently they're trying to.
Oh, man, it has been hard work for me there, Kara. I swear from day one, I have battled to stay in the attention of people. And, you know, it is definitely tough. And folks, we're coming up. We're ending this first hour here. And I did want to give my condolences to the Mars family. Yeah. It's so sad that we lost Jim Mars. Yeah. And it just shows you how quickly we, you know, lose these bright lights and how important it is that we stay on top of things.
Yeah, definitely to the Mars family.
But so with the world as presently this strange, I mean, how fantastical is a description of the Fae or their original conquests? How did they deal with the first humans? Does their legacy run into today? What does it mean for humanity and the role of the Catholic Church as we're talking about taking over the concepts and the history to engineer these royal expansions? Now, even the most devoted fantasy readers don't recognize that J.R.R. Tolkien, who wrote The Lord of the Rings, said that book was fundamentally a religious and Catholic work.
Huh. Did he say that?
He did say that. That is a direct quote of J.R.R. Tolkien. Now, this may come as a surprise to most of you. Well, it'll definitely come to a surprise as Catholics. And, well, I mean, when we're looking at Pope Francis and all the things that he's doing right now, I'll tell you, this stuff is getting strange. But we're going to pick this up on the other side in the members section, get deep into the analysis of megaliths and sacred sites. We're going to look at Kara's works of Guardians of Blood and Fire, The Search for the Celtic Heart. And I'm sure we'll get more into Dangerous Imaginations on the other side. So I want to thank you all, folks, for listening and keeping me going. Please retweet, reshare, and get over to freemantv.com to catch up on everything, because there's lots more to this than just this podcast. I'm posting news articles every day, new things, all kinds of stuff that you want to get over there and see. I just got hundreds of photography of my photography up for you to look into this bizarre ancient past. So if you go to freemantv.com, on every page you will see Freeman's photography, and you'll be able to see inside of these Mason logos, Mason temples, and you'll be able to see the ancient structures and all the things that we're going to discuss here in the next hour. So thank you all so much for tuning in and keeping us going. Make sure to give us thumbs up everywhere you see it, and share, because it's so critical right now. And if you, Kara, want to share any links or things that people need to look to find you, please do so.
Right now?
Sure.
Best place to go is www.patreon.com/ Kara St. Louis. And Patreon is spelled P-A-T-R-E-O-N. / Kara St. Louis, all lowercase, no dot between the Saint and the Louis. That's where I'm trying to do all my business right now. if you can't find me there, don't worry about it. Just go to my author's page, Kara St. Louis on Facebook, and I will help you out.
Fantastic. I'm going to have to look into that myself. There's always new technology, a new reading. This has not been easy, folks, as you are learning on this show. This has been a run with no reward. But we feel like we're doing our part, though, and that's what's most important, I'm certain, for you as well, Kara.
Yeah. You know, anything less, Freeman, is just living death, isn't it?
I couldn't do anything else. I couldn't.
No.
I don't care if I'm going to be broke at 80. You know, it's just, I got to keep going.
Yeah, I can't undo what I know. And neither can you.
No, absolutely. So, folks, thank you again so much for being who you are, because you are amazing. And I'm told this every week. So keep it up. And members, we'll join you over in the members section in just a second. The rest of you, thank you all so much. We will see you next week with another great show. We'll be right back.